Welcome back. You're listening to Tad Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. Good morning, Portland, Maine, and all points around Maine and around the country listening on iTunes. It's great to be here. Steve Woods, a.k.a. Steve-O. How are we doing today, Sully?
Doing pretty good. It's Friday.
It's Friday, and we have a very interesting and really informative and entertaining guest coming up in about 10 minutes. We recorded an interview with Jeff Iacusa. He is the Executive VP and General Manager of the Portland Sea Dogs. And this Thursday coming up, the Sea Dogs open up at Hadlock Field here in Portland. And we spend about 40 minutes talking with Jeff on what's going on with the team, how the team works with the Boston Red Sox. Really nice guy, great organization, big fans of both the Sea Dogs and the Burke family that owns and runs it, and Jeff and his team. So that is a fun interview in about 10 minutes you don't want to miss. But before we get there, let's cover on this day. It's April 4th. We have some interesting things from April 4th. Let me see. April 4th, 1949 is when NATO was established. North American Treaty Organization, still doing interesting kind of geopolitical work. Wayne Gretzky on this day finished the season with 212 points. And in a more somber note, on this day in 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. He was only 39 years old. That is what's happened on this day over time. Let's go over some other kind of timely topical things. Sully, did you happen to see my column in the Forecaster this week?
You know, I honestly can't say that I did.
Let's be honest here. We've got millions of listeners, and that's the default setting on all these, on everything we do here on Tide Smart Talk. This week's column talked a little bit about Howard Johnson's. And you may not remember Howard Johnson's. There haven't been many around over the last couple of decades, but the last two Howard Johnson's, last week, one in Lake Placid closed, and there's one in Maine, in Bangor, that's connected to the Howard Johnson's Motor Lodge, and apparently they're getting ready to close in the next couple of weeks and basically just convert it to continental breakfast for the guests of the Motor Lodge. And that will be the end of the era of Howard Johnson's.
Well, there'll still be the one in Lake George. It's funny you mention it because I just read the article yesterday about it.
Right. Well, I wrote a column a week and a half ago, and the funny part is the Bangor Daily News wrote a story based on my column from the week before. So I did all the heavy lifting. I did the research. I called, and they wrote a news story purporting to be this new little news tidbit that they just kind of figured out. And they didn't say anything like, hey, a week ago, Steve-O wrote a whole column about it. But the Lake George store, it was never connected to the corporation. It was never connected to the original Howard Johnson's. So I think Hojo historians have discounted the Lake George location as being a real Hojo's.
Okay.
Kind of an outline. It would be like if you started a restaurant and you wanted to call it Howard Johnson's. You know, it doesn't really meet the standard. But Howard Johnson's, for all intents and purposes, as of in the next week or two, will be gone. And the genesis of my column was that in the 50s, 40s, 50s, as the interstate highway system came on, I think it was Eisenhower who created kind of the interstate highway system, which really led the way for the Industrial Revolution so we could, you know, get goods and services all around the country.
Sure.
All of a sudden, Howard Johnson's popped up all over interstates and major roads. And long before McDonald's, Howard Johnson's was the number one food service operation. Orange roofs, 28 flavors, clam fry, fish fry. I grew up near a Howard Johnson's outside of Boston. And it was a family restaurant, family chain based on, I think, Wollaston or Quincy, Mass. Or something like that. And over the years, they just didn't evolve. They didn't grow. They didn't, you know. And so when you think of an old food service operation like Hojo's, and then you compare new food service operations like Chipotle or Panera or stuff like that, you can see where not just food taste changes, but But you can see operationally, you have to constantly evolve. And that goes for any business. You know, the most valuable company in the world right now, I think, is Apple. And when you look at Apple's a relatively new company relative to, I don't know, 30 years. IBM owned computing, big frame computing. But back in the 60s, 70s, they didn't develop personal computers. They didn't invest in the technology. They didn't have the vision to really evolve. And now they're still a company, and they're still a pretty big company. But they missed out on personal computers and PDAs and all this other stuff because they didn't evolve. But the genesis of my column was we here in Maine, we need to learn from those realities that if we don't evolve, if we don't constantly stay vigilant in terms of how we approach our local economics and tax plan and business development plan, we as a state risk being as obsolete as Howard Johnson's. So what else in the news? A couple of days ago, when Governor Paul LePage was making a budget presentation, a former state legislator, as well as former mayor, Joanne Twombly, kind of rushed the stage. And I think the Republicans and Governor LePage positioned it as she threatened the governor or she attacked the governor. I think she was really yelling at the governor, and she kind of tossed the thing of Vaseline on the stage. And I think it was totally inappropriate. I disagree with almost everything Governor LePage says and does, but I think that we all need to be civil. I think we need to respect the office. And I don't think that helped the discussion. You know, she may have had reasonable points having to do with his budget policy, but yelling and being dragged off and bringing a jar of Vaseline, that didn't help anything, anyone, and I wish it didn't happen.
Nope.
Other news this week, Elliot Cutler was named CEO of the new Graduate Center. It's still not exactly clear what the goal or the role. I think some consulting group made a proposal saying we need to kind of leverage the power of USM and UMaine relative to their high-level business schools and law schools. But he's not a dean. He's not involved with academics. I think his goal was to unify the business and law schools. And I think anything that creates more opportunity here in Maine is a good thing. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that rolls out. I think he starts the job this week. So what do you think about that whole Graduate Center? And you're a lot closer to an age in terms of your academic background and your friends that either have gone to school at USM or UMaine. Do you think that's a good idea or not?
You know, I think it is a good idea. I mean, I still every once in a while look at MBA programs myself, and something that's more centralized and has more focused budget and more focused attention towards it is got to be a good thing, especially for people like me and people of my age group to have that opportunity.
Right. And if it helps Maine, and if it helps us put attention and focus and synergy in terms of the law school and the business school, I think it's worth giving it a shot. So I wish him luck in that new role, as well as USM and UMaine. We will have our guest in just a second, Jeff Iacusa, who is the general manager of the Portland Sea Dogs. But I wanted to just make a quick mention. A lot of people don't realize that the Portland Sea Dogs, for many, many years, was owned by Dan Burke, the Burke family. I think about 20 years ago is when he first brought the team here. Great guy, great family, really focused on kind of community involvement. Over about a year ago, Dan Burke passed away, and it's still in the family. And Bill Burke, his son, is active in running the team. But a lot of people don't realize Bill Burke, who we interviewed about a year ago, had a fascinating career in himself, heading up the Weather Channel, Turner Broadcasting. But he was also the co-writer of Ted Turner's book, Call Me Ted. And it was a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller. It looks like an autobiography by Ted, but it was written by Bill Burke. And he's Maine's very own Bill Burke, who is the owner of the Portland Sea Dogs. So without further ado, let's go into the interview with Jeff. And this week is when baseball season starts in Maine. I'm a season ticket holder, love going to the games, encourage everyone to go. And here's our interview with Jeff Iacusa. There's nothing like the view from the Welcome back to iSmart Talk with Steve. You're listening to News Talk WLB 1310 AM and WLBRadio.com. Please join me in welcoming our special guest. It's baseball season, right, Sully? And you know what that means?
Time to play ball.
Time to play ball. And we have Mr. Baseball, relative to here in Maine, general manager of the Portland Sea Dogs. Please welcome Jeff Iacusa. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well. How are you?
Yeah, you're only, what are you? You'll be about 6 days from opening day, so it's got to be slow. Nothing going on.
Not much
world?
Going on. No. We usually wait till opening day and show up. At least.
I'm kidding. You've got a lot going on, which I want to get to because I think it's really exciting. And as you know, I've been a Sea Dogs fan for about a decade and really appreciate the work that y'all do out there. It's great family entertainment. And why don't we start, before we talk, I want to get to the season, what's going on, kind of new things fans can look forward to out at Hadlock. But to me, it's always interesting people who work and contribute here in Maine, kind of their backstory. So if you wouldn't mind spending, we'll spend a couple minutes talking about kind of where you went to school and what ultimately brought you into the role of general manager of the Sea Dogs.
Sure, no problem. We go back to when I was finishing up high school, graduated way back in 1997. And as I was graduating, I had a great interest in baseball. I played baseball all my life, loved baseball, but was not.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Greenfield, Massachusetts.
Oh, cool.
About 3 hours away. And loved baseball all my life, loved watching it, loved playing it, but knew as I was finishing up high school that was kind of the end of my competitive career as far as not being able to play when I went on to college. So really started to hear about this degree called sport management. And as I learned more about it, I learned that UMass Amherst, which is right near where I grew up, had one of the better programs in the country. So I applied and got in and ended up going to UMass. And as I was finishing up my time at UMass Amherst, I was on what was known as the internship track. So my last semester senior year, I was going to do an internship somewhere, and I wanted to do it in baseball. And I interviewed with a number of teams, and my advisor told me, well, if you get offered the internship in Portland, take it. I've never heard a bad thing about that place, so go up there and take it. And within about 2 days, I got a call that offered me the internship, so I accepted it. Came up here in 2001, interned in both sales and stadium operations. After that season, actually went back to Massachusetts for a few months, and then a full-time job came up with the Sea Dogs, and have been here since.
You talked about your early baseball career. Mine ended in third grade, and I got to tell you, I was a contender. I grew up in Needham, Mass., just outside of Boston. I love baseball. And so my neighbor, Doug Riccadelli, and I were playing catch or pickle or something in the front yard. And there were like two grassy areas in my front yard separated by a concrete walk. I was rushing in to pick up a grounder. It hit the concrete rock, chipped my front tooth.
Ooh.
And back then, they didn't have all the dental technology, so they put this copper band around me. And my brother, who was kind of a cruel big brother, labeled me copper tooth. And from that point on, I could hit the ball, I could throw the ball, I could catch the ball, but anything on the ground, I would just kind of like, huh? So you may have seen, I grew up outside of Boston. I grew up watching Carl Yastrzemski, Ken Harrelson, Rico Petrocelli going to... buddies of mine used to skip school opening day for the Red Sox, take the MBTA, go to Fenway, and it was a tradition. But, you know, like you, I had to face reality.
Yeah, and I can remember going home from school in elementary school on opening day and just being excited all day to get out of school and go home and turn on the TV and watch opening day. And I remember in the early 90s when ESPN picked up baseball and started showing a lot of the other games, it was just like heaven for me to be able to go home after school and just watch two or three different games through the evening. And, it's a couple different things. I love the game, and it's also kind of especially here in Maine, it's kind of an introduction to spring and knowing that the warmer temperatures and summertime's on its way.
Yeah, there's something about the sport also that is so tied into the weather and the environment. You know, and obviously team sports that are played inside don't really have that feeling, but there's something about baseball where the freshly cut grass, depending on if it's a day game or a night game and the sun is setting, the environment almost plays a big part to the fan experience, right?
It certainly does, and that's one of the things we're fortunate about, to be playing baseball in summer in Maine, because I don't think there's a better place to be in the summer than in Maine. I mean, we're vacation land. People are coming here, and there's great things to do in the winter as well, but in the summertime, I think we're so fortunate to be playing here in Maine with the temperatures. And as you said, as the sun's setting, you know, just it creates such a nice atmosphere. And it's funny you say that, too, because we hear from our players when they go on the road and they'll go down to Maryland or Virginia and places like that, and the heat and humidity in the summer, it's different. It's not nearly as nice as playing here in Maine, and we're fortunate because of that.
So we're talking a little bit, by the way, we've got Jeff Iacusa here. He is the general manager of the Portland Sea Dogs. So starting as an intern, which I think is a great, I was also involved with sports management. I was a sports, what do we call it, sports administration. I was in the School of Kinesiology at South Carolina. But Dr. Guy Lewis was the head of the program in South Carolina, and he was one of the founders at UMass.
Okay.
So programs like that have cropped up all over the place. USM has a pretty good program right now that
great
I've spoken
one, yeah.
to, and I'm sure you get a lot of interns from that program.
We do.
So what was the path, other than looking at your career trajectory, coming in as an intern and then getting more involved in terms of director of ticket sales and then assistant GM? Talk a little bit about your role as executive VP and general manager relative to the team. And then we'll talk a little bit about how the team connects to the Boston Red Sox farm system, where some of the operations are local, but the player designations, that part of it stays within the Red Sox organization. So talk a little bit about your job with the Sea Dogs and where the connection is with the Red Sox.
Exactly, sure. So my job as the general manager is I oversee the business operation. We have a relationship, working relationship with the Red Sox. So they take care of the baseball side. We take care of the business side. So we take care of all the selling tickets. We maintain the stadium. We arrange for player travel. You know, we assist the players with housing. There's a whole gamut of things that we take care of on the business side. And then, as you said, we have a working relationship with the Red Sox, and they draft the players. They sign the players. They assign the players to us. And they also hire the coaching staff. So from our standpoint, I'm overseeing the business operation. It's the budgeting. It's the strategic planning. It's making sure that our staff is going out and delivering within the community and delivering what we want to do on a game-by-game basis. And, you know, we have 71 home games, and I equate it for as if we're running a marathon in the season, which starts on Thursday. Is the start line, and then Labor Day is the end of the regular season, and that's kind of our finish line. And I always kind of harp this with the staff throughout the off season. There are a lot of people, we joked about it, there are a lot of people that think, oh, the season ends, you guys just take the winter off and show up, you know, a day or two before opening day. But for us, that's kind of our training period. That's the time where we're really tearing apart what we did the previous season and then what we want to do in the upcoming season and going out and making those things happen. And the more work, the harder we work in the off season, the better prepared we are for the season. And I think we do a really great job. We have an unbelievable staff, really dedicated, really work hard to making sure that we're fulfilling our commitment as a good community member and putting on a good show for when people come.
Yeah, I think that's a really important part to key on, the community part. It's locally owned, family owned. You and I spoke a little bit before. Some people may be aware, but Dan Burke, who recently passed away, his son Bill Burke, which is now primary owner, the Burke family owns it. But Dan Burke was so involved and so interested in baseball, it feels like he really set the tone for the organization.
He did. So his dream was to bring a baseball team to Maine. And back in 1992, when the team was officially awarded to Portland, we were an expansion franchise for the Florida Marlins. So in 1993, the Rockies and Marlins came into MLB. In 1994, their minor league affiliates came in, and that's when the Sea Dogs came. We were awarded the franchise to be the AA affiliate of the Florida Marlins. And Dan's dream was to bring a team to Maine. He vacationed in Kennebunk, and he loved the state, loved what it stood for. And his directive from day one was to be a good community member. For him, it wasn't about, you know, making every last penny. It was making sure that families had access. His family meant so much to him, and you see that in the way that the Burke family treats us as staff members. His favorite memory, he always said, was being able to sit in the stands and seeing families have a good time at a game. And that's why our ticket prices, our top ticket price is still $10. Children and senior can get in for $5. And that was a big mission for him and continues to be for us, is to have access, anybody that wants to come to a game, to make it affordable family entertainment. And, you know, a lot of our policies and things like that around the ballpark are centered around making sure that it's a great family experience. And that, you know, one of the key things we key in on is that if you have an average family of four, let's say, that all four family members have a different reason for wanting to go to a Sea Dogs game, but that they all can agree to go. And that's what we work hard to try to do.
And that's why I'm a season ticket holder for the last 10 years.
Coming to many games,
many
too.
Many games. I love the Sea Dogs. And in the spirit of disclosure, I'm one of the minority co-owners of the Red Claws. And I feel as though we have a similar approach. The Ryan family, Bill Ryan Sr. and Jr., another family relationship that was really driven the ownership. Same approach with wanting to have family entertainment, family values. So that for me, the Red Claws in the cold weather, even though we're going to the playoffs this year, which is great, but then the Sea Dogs in the warm weather, I wish that could cover the whole year.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I love going to the Red Claws games too. Yeah. I think you guys do an unbelievable job of keeping people entertained and being a good community member. And you know, in Maine, that's so important, is being a good community member. But I'm a big fan of going to the Red Claws games. And I have a 7-year-old son who loves to go. And it's creating that atmosphere of, if you're the parent and you come home and say, hey, I have Sea Dogs tickets, I have Red Claws tickets, that your kids are going to think you're a hero. And that's
right.
Or vice versa. If the child says, hey, I want to go to the Sea Dogs or Red Claws game, that, you know, they're the parent, it's easy for them to do. It's not going to cost them a whole lot of money like it does maybe with major league sports.
Yeah, and the other thing is the Hadlock Field. You know, do you call it the Little Green Monster?
Because the Maine Monster.
The Maine Monster.
The Maine Monster, yes.
It's a charming environment. It's a, you know, the food service operations are great, prices are reasonable, but there's not a bad seat in the place. It's really comfortable, and you have a lot of staff there making sure that it's a safe environment, it's a fun environment. So that's a big part of it too. And the lighthouse that pops up when home runs happen. You've got how many fireworks shows? Like 4 or 5 every season?
We do 5 every year. Yep.
Every year.
Yeah.
I would encourage, first of all, everyone should go to every single Sea Dogs game because I love them all. I think this year there's a bonus in that the All-Star game is there. But particularly the fireworks shows, if you go to the Sea Dogs website, and which is seadogs.com, the fireworks shows, it's like a great show. It's almost like a 4th of July kind of show, and you can sit right in your seat and watch the fireworks that come right out of the outfield wall, right?
Yeah, that's a big thing for us. And we get a ton of great feedback. And some of the feedback that we get that's pretty neat are from visiting players and even some of our players who see a lot of fireworks shows at other parks. And the feedback we get is that ours is what they, in their opinion, is the best. And that's what we try to do. We do 5 a year, and we try to make all 5 really special and really great shows. And it's proven to be a success for us.
Let's talk about the season starting. We've got Jeff Iacusa here. He's the general manager of the Portland Sea Dogs. Coming up this Thursday is the first of 71 home games. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
So what can fans expect other than beautiful, balmy weather?
Beautiful.
You guys offered, I thought it was a really interesting kind of promotional message about a month ago when people were all concerned about the snow, that you guaranteed that the game would take place and wouldn't be interrupted by snow. And if that happened, you were going to offer double tickets or a refund or something like that.
Yeah.
But at this point in the season, you've got the snow removed. You're working on, you know, making sure the facility. So all lights are green for now on Thursday, right?
We are. Yeah, we're ready to go. You know, a couple things left to do at the ballpark, but we're ready to go. And in that, you touched upon that ticket guarantee. And what it is, if we don't play on opening day, April 9th, you get your ticket is good for 2 tickets for a game the rest of the season. And what it was, you know, throughout most of the winter, as we were getting a lot of snow and such, a lot of people, especially towards the end of February, were kind of laughing, saying, you got no chance to play April 9th. And we knew internally that we were going to do everything we can to make sure the field was ready and that the snow that we had gotten wasn't going to be what knocked us out. We could get a rainstorm, snowstorm, or anything next week that could put us in trouble. But we knew what we had had through that time wasn't going to be a problem because we knew we would do everything we can to get it off the field and get it out. We did by mid-March. The field was uncovered, and then it needs to go through the thawing process and things like that. But it was really a way to kind of change the conversation and get people excited for it. And people responded. People, I think, you know, people that I talked to, it kind of gave them a glimmer of hope of, hey, you know what, these guys are sure, and that means spring's right around the corner.
And it was also good just to have the discussion, you know.
Yeah.
The more people talk about the better weather coming and the baseball season starting, I think it made it a little more tolerable for the snow that we did have a few weeks ago. And anything special happening Thursday night? I know you have events and promotions every night, and you know, for opening night, how do you approach? Is opening night different than the other games, or is it basically just starting the machine up.
Opening night's a little bit different in that we will do our team introductions for both the home and road team. So kind of let our fans know, you know, who's on our team, and then we'll announce Reading as well. That's who we're playing. We've got Keith Carson from now the Weather Channel, but previously WCSH6, coming up to throw out the first pitch. And he's kind of a good friend of the team and just thought it'd be fun kind of playing off the weather theme of how harsh the winter was to have him come up and do the first pitch. And, you know, we're just excited. We've got some new in-between inning promotions we're trying out. We've got new box seats. We replaced all the box seats and added cup holders for the fans in the 100-level seats this offseason.
Well, I hadn't heard about that. Hold on one sec there, Jeff. So the seats, am I getting a cup holder?
You are. And you will already have a cup holder. It's already installed.
And the seats themselves have changed, or is it just
the there's new seats. You know, they look a little bit different, but for the most part, same size, same, you know, same color, things like that. But all new seats in the 100 level, and we added the cup holders as part of that project as well.
Well, that is fantastic.
We did that late last fall, and then we've also added Wi-Fi availability for people coming. Obviously, to my knowledge, we're the first Eastern League team to have stadium-wide Wi-Fi, and we started kind of looking at it a couple years ago. I didn't realize how challenging it actually would be to add that for how many people come to a game and how many people need access to Wi-Fi, and we finally pulled it off this offseason, so we're excited about that, too.
Wow. So you need to have, you know, a lot of indoor stadiums are getting involved with more interactive, and I agree with you. I haven't heard of any other minor league baseball. So you had to have not only the connectivity, but then you have to have antennas in enough areas so you have the coverage.
You have a signal and enough people to connect. Like, you know, a lot of people say, why don't you just put a wireless modem up there? And problem is only 10 or 12 people can connect to it, and we've got to have a stadium set up and ready to go with a 7,000-person crowd.
So I can, starting this Thursday, get my Jumbo Diet Coke. I can go out and get my chicken cheese sandwich, which I get out on the grill patio.
Yeah.
Get my popcorn. And then in about the fifth inning, I usually get the sugar-powdered, deep-fried, unhealthy, delicious cinnamon thing.
Fried dough, yeah.
Fried dough. And I can be checking on ESPN scores and what's going on in the Eastern League right from my seat.
There's no reason to leave.
Oh, my God. I've got to make a confession to you, though, Jeff. And it saddens me to announce this, but I'll be in St. Louis next Thursday. I can't make the home opener. I'm going to try to make as many of the other 70 games. But Sully, you're going to the home opener, is that right?
I'll be there.
Great.
Sully here is one of your biggest fans. And when she heard, and she booked you as the guest, that's Emily Sullivan, also known as Sully, she was like, I want to go to the home opener. She didn't even know about Wi-Fi or cup holders.
It's true. I had no idea.
I hope I made your day.
You did. 100%.
And, you know, over 10 years, as with other season ticket holders, every year, you know, you contact the ticket office and you say, hey, are there other seats open? Sometimes people move away or for whatever reason they don't renew. But over 10 years working with you and your ticket office, my seats have moved closer to the point where I'm now in the danger zone on the third base line right in the front.
You got to bring your glove.
Got to bring your glove in like Kevlar.
Yes.
But I think they're the best seats in the house because, to me, third base is one of the most exciting areas. You know, everyone wants to be behind the plate, which is a great perspective. But third base, you see some incredible action because on, you know, there's nothing more exciting than somebody hitting a triple because it feels like there's always interaction or somebody sliding or the ball's coming in.
Coming right at you, yeah.
Yeah, so we're right there. And if you ever need me on the team as kind of like a last-minute call-up, I am so close, I can just kind of jog across. All you got to do is give me the signal, and I'm there.
And the manager gets thrown out or something, you can hop out and coach third base.
Yeah, I'm sure you have security. There's a protocol. Big, goofy guy on the field, code blue, get him off the field. We've got Jeff Iacusa here. He's general manager, executive vice president, general manager of the Portland Sea Dogs. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB 1310. So talk for people that may not be familiar with the Sea Dogs within the organization, double A team, Pawtucket is triple A. Talk a little bit. Baseball is unique, and it feels like there's so many levels because a team has so many players on the roster. And unlike other, especially with the number of games, so the organization, everyone comes down to Florida in the Red Sox organization, and then it basically works where the Red Sox pick their roster, who's going to make the team, and then from there, they designate certain players to AAA, certain players to AA, single A. How many A's are there? Because there's a lot of people, a lot of players in the system. And do you, even though the Red Sox control the player part of it, when do you hear that a player is being, you know, designated to Portland? And how does that whole process work, you know, the baseball part of it with the Red Sox?
Sure. So there are a total really of four single A teams. There's the Lowell Spinners, which actually don't start until June. And those are most of the guys that get drafted in early June coming out of high school or college will get assigned to Lowell. And then a similar league, there's extended spring training slash the Gulf Coast League that plays down at the Fort Myers complex where the Red Sox do spring training. And then there's Greenville and Salem in single A, which are both single A teams full season, double A Portland, triple A Pawtucket. And pretty much what usually happens is that you go from Lowell or the Gulf Coast League to Greenville to Salem to Portland to Pawtucket to the Red Sox is kind of the flow of it. And really one of the toughest jumps in minor league baseball is not only going from triple A to the big leagues, which is very difficult, but also going from single A to double A because you really have three teams that are feeding in. So you got 75 players that are feeding into one 25-man roster. So at our level, you know, the talent it jumps up quite a bit from single A to double A. Our level, we usually see mostly prospects. A lot of guys that are on their way up, exciting players. We saw it last year with Mookie Betts and Henry Owens and Brian Johnson. We had one of our most talented teams that we've ever had last year, and it was really exciting to watch. Triple A is a little bit different, kind of like what you said. The Red Sox are making their cuts now. They have a lot of guys that have some big league experience or are right on that cusp of getting into the big leagues. And they're guys that are there with the big league experience who are there in case there's an injury and you need somebody called up right away. You know, you don't see a lot of times prospects kind of going back and forth for an injury fulfillment. Once they really bring a prospect up, they want him there for good. So AAA has, you know, a fair amount of those guys that have a little bit of big league time but haven't quite caught on with the roster, so they're going to be in AAA and are ready to kind of be an emergency fill-in. You know, I think that's what I think makes our level so great is that it's a lot of young kids coming up and good prospects.
And probably from single A to double A, those are kind of practice leagues. But by the time you get to the Sea Dogs, it looks and feels like a professional baseball game. The stadium, the umpires, the music, the lights, the scoreboard. So that's probably a big part of the jump, too, where it feels, you know, obviously Fenway Park is bigger and Major League Baseball has you know, it's faster and all that. But when you make it to the Portland team, it feels like you're in professional baseball, whereas in some of the single-A locations, it's a practice. You know, it feels more like it's less formal or it's less structured. Is that
it is. And single-A has grown to bigger business, but there are still some of those left. And yeah, I mean, once you get to double-A, and the baseball, as you said, is far crisper. And, you know, the pitchers have to be far sharper because the hitters are that much better. And the hitters have to be that much better because the pitchers are that much better. And you know, there really is a game within the game itself. And that's what these guys are training to learn and trying to figure out. And, you know, having them learn the game. Most of these guys have the skills to play. I mean, they're playing professionally. They're amongst the best of wherever they go. I'm always in awe as I sit and I look at our roster because the guy with the lowest batting average or the highest ERA on our team was still the best player wherever they grew up. They were still, you know, the best player wherever they grew
Maybe
up.
Maybe the best in their state. They could be Mr. Baseball in Ohio or Nebraska or something, and then they get – the amazing thing about baseball, and for anyone who's followed it or watched movies or, you know, depending how deep you go in terms of – the statistics are such an important part of it. And when you look at something like batting average, and one of my favorite movies is Bull Durham, and that covered a minor league team. The difference between being above 300 or below, depending on how many at-bats, is a couple of hits a week or something.
So exactly.
It's amazing. The margin is so thin. And so much is dependent, and so much of these guys' lives are controlled by, you know, I think the Kevin Costner character, Crash Davis, described it as all you need is one extra blooper, one seeing eye, double one. And you do that, and you make it to the bigs.
Yep.
You don't, and you don't quite make it, and you know, your dream is over.
Yeah, and you, we just talked about it. There's those 75 guys that are behind you at single A that are trying to get your roster spot in double A, and you have a couple of those bloopers that don't fall in, or you know, a couple of those CNI singles that don't go, and there's always a new crop of players that they're developing and coming up, and it's tough. It's a grind. Plus, you're playing 142 games, you know, 71 home, 71 road, and that's a grind in and of itself as well.
Yeah, Jackie Bradley Jr., he was up, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And I think there was a story this week about he had a pretty good spring training, didn't make the big roster, so he's starting in Pawtucket, right?
He will start in Pawtucket, and it's just amazing to show the depth of the Red Sox. He's one of the best defensive center fielders you will find.
So quick, and when he was at Hadlock, but on the big league stage, his hitting has been, you know, below 200, right? Somewhere around there.
Yep.
And they just need more offense from that position.
They do. And, you know, you look at Mookie Betts, guy that started last year with the Portland Sea Dogs, let off the season with a home run and didn't stop hitting the whole year. And to see a guy like that, I spent some time down in spring training a couple weeks ago and asked our manager kind of jokingly. I said, okay, who's our Mookie Betts this year? Who's going to be the guy that starts here and makes it to the big leagues? And he laughed. And he goes, boy, I don't know. And I said, well, did you think Mookie Betts was going to be Mookie Betts last year? He goes, nope. He was a great talent. But it is a challenge to go right from double A to the big leagues, and he did it, and he's adjusted so well. He's a special player.
Do you want to hear one of my spring training stories?
I'd love it.
It's fun and exciting. Sully, have you heard the story?
I don't think I have.
Okay. It involves with Halle Berry coming to my hotel room.
Wow.
I don't want to start the story with kind of a salacious tease, but that is the truth. Back in the early 90s, mid-90s, I was in Atlanta, and I was representing Dave Justice, who people who follow baseball may be familiar with his career. Great hitter. I think he was National League Rookie of the Year in 1990. And I was working with ProServe, doing marketing for Dave Justice. And back then in the early 90s, and he married Halle Berry, the actress, his career, he was much more visible than Halle Berry. She hadn't done some of the big movies. And so he was staying at one of the spring training hotels down there. It was a Marriott. Now most of the players rent houses and condos. And so I was supposed to have dinner with him. And dinner at spring training is like 4 in the afternoon. The guys like to eat, and then, you know, sometimes they, you know, get therapy or massage, and they want to crash early so they can. So Dave Justice was supposed to pick me up to go out to dinner at 4. And I'm at the Marriott, and I'm watching, like, you know, Judge Judy on TV or Wheel of Fortune. It's 3:30, 3:45. I'm standing around in my underwear, which is a visual that you and the audience probably don't want to linger on too long. And there's a knock on the door. And I look out the peephole, and there's Halle Berry. And I'm like, hey, Halle. And she's like, Steve, Dave sent me up. He didn't want to. And at that point, all the fans and all the autograph seekers all hang out wherever the player hotels are to get autographs. It's turned into a big business. It's gone way beyond just fans. It's kind of this whole commercial thing where, you know, as you know, people come to the Hadlock Field with like hundreds of pictures and memorabilia, and they sell it, and it's eBay. So he didn't want to get out of the car. So he's in the car with the tinted windows going, I don't want to engage with fans. So he sends Halle Berry. This was, I don't think everyone had cell phones back then. And so he sent Halle Berry up to the room to bring me down. And I'm like, Halle, I'm, you know, watching Judge Judy in my underwear. It's okay, Steve. And I'm like, okay, hold on one sec there, Halle Berry. And so obviously it's not a salacious story. And I threw some clothes on and went out and had dinner with Dave Justice and Halle Berry.
That's a neat story.
We've got Jeff Iacusa here. He's the general manager of the Portland Sea Dogs. Talk a little, I touched upon Bull Durham, one of my favorite movies. You've been in baseball. You've loved it personally. You've worked in it now for over a decade. What, do you go with Bull Durham? Do you go with the Billy Bean movie with, who is that? It came out 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Who was in that movie? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I'm trying to blank on it too.
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
Wait, see, Sully really is a baseball fan.
Yeah.
And so which movie, you know, of all the baseball movies do you as a baseball guy kind of relate to and think is kind of a cool movie that captures kind of the spirit?
Field of Dreams.
Me too.
Field of Dreams is probably my favorite movie, and I saw it as a kid and still watch it now. My son has a copy of it. Field of Dreams definitely, and Moneyball and Bull Durham, great movies as well, but Field of Dreams is tops for me.
Yeah, Field of Dreams is kind of magical.
Yeah,
it captures the spirit, captures the kind of the mythology of baseball and kind of the rhythm.
And it's kind of been rekindled for me because we do our Field of Dreams promotion the second to last game every year. We build the cornfield and the outfield and have our players come out as our fan appreciation game. So it since we've been doing that, and I've done it now for 15 years, it kind of rekindles it for me. And that's just what – it's bittersweet because it's our second to last game of the season, but it's my favorite promotion we do as well.
That's great. What about For Love of the Game? Did you watch that? That was a Kevin Costner one.
Yeah. Have seen that as well. That's actually a good story as well.
That's a story that has a similar kind of emotive feel as Field of Dreams, although it's more contemporary. It's Kevin Costner and what's her name? Kelly Preston.
Yeah.
And the flashbacks between Sully, have you seen that?
I think so.
You've got to go see it. If you're not sure, go to Netflix. I was going to say go to Blockbuster, but they're all closed. But that movie, it's about Costner plays a pitcher, I think, with the Detroit Tigers, and he's on the tail end of his career,
yep.
And he keeps flashing back, for love of the game, and new ownership is trying to push him out and all this. But that's a great movie.
Yeah.
Anything involving baseball. There should be baseball movies every year.
If you want a good laugh, Major League is a good movie, too. Just the first one, though.
Major League with Wild Thing,
yeah,
with Charlie Sheen,
yeah, and Euchre's in it, and yeah, it's the first one's pretty good. Corbin Burnson,
that wasn't bad at all.
Yeah,
talk a little bit about the All Star Classic. I think the Portland hosted it last about 10 years ago, and so when does it occur? What's the date? And so for. Was it July 15th?
July 15th, yes.
Yeah, so Portland's hosting the All-Star. Is it just for Double A?
So it's the Eastern League All-Star game, so it's our league. The 12 teams from our league will each have All-Star representatives at it. And, it's our first time since 2005. It's only the second time in our history that we're hosting it. And it's July 15th, and we couldn't be more excited to be having that. As we kind of touched upon, Portland is such a great baseball market, a lot of savvy baseball fans. There, whether we like it or not, there's some chilly baseball nights in April or May, and the baseball fans come out, and they're supportive of the team because they're passionate about baseball. And I think this will be pretty neat for the fans to see some of the best players, some guys that in a couple of years are going to be at the big league All-Star game, but playing here in Portland on July 15th. And we'll have a home run derby. We'll have an autograph session.
Is it over 1 or 2 days, or how is it formatted?
We are doing it. It's funny. Our All-Star break is actually only 2 days. It's a Tuesday and a Wednesday, and the game itself is on the Wednesday. And Tuesday is a travel day in for most of the players. Some teams try to do things on Tuesday and Wednesday. For us, what we're doing is we're actually keeping Tuesday a travel-in day and an actual off day for the players. We're going to have a lobster bake for them, just a private lobster bake for the players, give them a little taste of Maine and kind of honor them, but let that be a relaxing day for them and their families. And then on Wednesday, we're actually going to get them out and then put them to work. We're going to do some community appearances at the Children's Hospital, at the Maine Veterans Home, the Boys and Girls Club, and in an after-school a summer camp program in Portland. Kind of have them go out and kind of visit the community and see all sorts of different people that way. And then we open up our gates at 3 o'clock so fans can see batting practice. There'll be an autograph session. There'll be the home run derby. We'll do the team introductions, have the game, and then fireworks after the game. So it'll be a
full day. Tickets are still available?
Yeah, they're going quick, though. I anticipate being sold out probably within the next, hopefully, 5 to 6 weeks. We'll be sold out. And then what happens, we have to hold back a certain amount of tickets for the actual players, for their families and such.
Right.
So I think what will happen is after the team is announced, they'll take the tickets that they need. And then if there's some extras, hopefully we can release them in advance of the game. But if you're thinking about going, I definitely recommend getting the tickets now.
Oh, I'm definitely going. That's why I'm a season ticket holder. I wouldn't miss it for the world. What's the sequence now to set the Sea Dogs roster? I know that the Red Sox have set theirs, And what's the timing for players to report to Portland for next Thursday's home game?
So what's going to happen is they finish up at spring training, and it's actually a point I wanted to make too, is that people ask, well, where do your players go to spring training? Our players are right down at Fort Myers with the big league club. A lot of them get time to play in some of the big league games, but there's also minor league games that go on every day as well. And their last minor league game is today, Saturday. After the game, the rosters will, for the most part, be finalized. Guys that drive up will actually leave later on this afternoon. They'll drive up, and they'll be in Portland probably by Monday, later on Monday or early Tuesday. Then there's a group that fly that don't have cars that fly up. They'll fly up on Sunday afternoon, and they'll get settled over Monday and early Tuesday, and then they'll have a team workout Tuesday, another team workout Wednesday. We do media day Wednesday. We have the Welcome Back Sea Dogs dinner Wednesday night, and then they have at it Thursday.
Jeff Iacusa, general manager of the Sea Dogs. Do you have any idea who's coming up, or is at this point it's just guesswork until you know who's assigned and all that?
It's a lot of guesswork. It's never finalized until they obviously finalize it. And we've had times where guys come here and then end up getting switched even before the season starts. So it's always a fluid roster. But you know, some of the same guys that we had last year. I think Henry Ramos, who was one of the best hitters in the league until he got hurt in late May last year, should be back in our outfield. Cure De La Cruz, another outfielder, good prospect, should be here. Shannon Wilkerson.
Who's
might
the guy
be.
From Cuba who the Red Sox paid $32 million for and then had to pay the luxury tax of another $30
million? Yeah, Yan Moncada. He will more than likely start in in Greenville, in single-A Greenville. They'll probably have him come up slow between Greenville and Salem. We might see him here in Portland late this year. Or maybe to start next year, because they're going to take it slow with him. He's a 19-year-old kid. I saw him down in spring training.
I know, but $60 million.
Yeah. He's impressive. We saw him take batting practice and take infield practice on a few different days down there, and he's a ball player. You can tell he's going to be special.
But the way that Major League Baseball works and collective bargaining works is, I'm sure that you follow all the details, but for most people it's, you know, there's a – you know, the luxury tax is a little bit of a mystery in terms of when a team goes over what's established as the salary cap. So the Red Sox saw this guy, loved him so much, 19, doesn't speak a word of English, right?
Nope.
Came, you know, played in the Cuban system and did well. Obviously, people have been scouting him for years.
Yeah.
And the Red Sox decided, okay, we're going to give him a rookie deal of $30-something million. And then they had to pay $30 million, and that's due like in July or something, just as a tax.
Yep, to Major League Baseball.
To Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And he hasn't hit a Major League pitch yet.
Not during
a live game.
Tells you they see something there. They wouldn't make that kind of investment. And you're right. People keep saying, oh, he got $63 million. He actually didn't. He got half of that, and Major League Baseball got the other half. And it's the rules are really complicated, but basically for international player signings, the Red Sox had already hit their limit of what they were allowed to spend, so there's 100% tax. And they saw him and thought, this is a guy that's worth that 100% tax. And you know, I'm excited to see him here in Portland and see what he does.
The reason he's starting in single A, obviously they want to take him slow. He'll be working with their coaching staff in terms of making sure that he develops within the Red Sox system and he learns the signals and how the Red Sox does stuff. And I'm sure they don't want him to come right up to Portland. First of all, it's colder weather, and you don't want a guy hurting his arm or, you know, not acclimating to the weather. But are you pretty sure he's going to come through Portland? Like, they wouldn't just jump him from Greenville to Pawtucket?
No, more than likely they wouldn't, unless he's having some kind of Mookie Betts type thing. But even in single A, they'd still stop him in double A. I'm certain that we'll see him here at some point. I think at best late this year and more than likely next year is when we'll see him. But it would be rare. I've never heard of a guy going from single A to triple A, at least within the last 10 or 15 years.
But you also haven't heard of a guy from Cuba who's got $60 million.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So a lot of it depends on how the big team is doing and where they have either opportunities to make a big push or if they're not competitive in the fall in terms of postseason. And it may be like, why rush the guy through if it's not going to really impact how the Red Sox?
Yeah, and they're starting him at second base, and the Red Sox have a pretty good second baseman right now. So that, you know, that could change depending on how his development goes and things like that. It's funny, Dustin Pedroia was not a second baseman until he came to Portland. He was a shortstop, was drafted as a shortstop, played single as a shortstop. But when he came up to Portland in 2005, as a shortstop. We had another shortstop by the name of Hanley Ramirez here.
Right.
So they shifted him to second base. And, you know, for the start of our 2005 season, we had Hanley at short and Pedroia at second. Also had Papelbon and Lester in our starting rotation, too. So
yeah,
that was a special team.
People forget how many great players that they see in the Red Sox have all come through Portland.
Yeah.
I remember a few years ago, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 years ago, David Ortiz came down.
2008.
That long ago?
Yeah, 7 years ago.
I just said 3 or 4. Man, time flies.
Time flies.
I remember him playing, and what a nice guy.
Yeah. You know,
he was rehabbing or something?
He was.
Off an injury, and he just wanted to get some pitchers. And
did 3 games with us. It was unbelievable. It's actually a funny story about that is it was our first season where our online ticketing system was automated. So prior to that season, if you ordered a ticket online, we had to come in and fulfill the order, run the credit card, and do all that and print the tickets. And that was our first season where it was all done automatically, so we didn't have to manually go in and do it. And we were on the road on Saturday and Sunday, so our ticket office was closed, and Francona announced it prior to the Saturday game. You know, Ortiz is going to be important Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Between that moment and Monday morning, we had sold about 6,000 tickets online that were all done, thankfully, processed automatically through our new system. Otherwise, we would have been in there Monday morning processing 6,000 ticket orders.
That's
but it was a great experience.
And that's one of the benefits of the proximity to Portland, to Boston.
Yep.
And I know with the Red Claws, we've benefited from that same system where the Celtics have groups of players. James Young is one of them who's on their roster. He's a rookie out of Kentucky. This year, he's come up and down. He'll play a game for the Celtics. They'll designate him for the Red Claws. He'll play, and he's played the last couple of games. But being this close and having a community like Portland, which really welcomes players coming in, a lot of big league players would be like, oh, I don't want to go to Portland. I don't want to go to a D-League thing. But if you have a great facility, great ownership, great staff, and great fans, a lot of these players look at it as, hey, it's a good opportunity to, you know, play in a game environment, and it's a great city to visit. So it'd be great if, you know, I don't want to see any players injured. They have to come back from rehab. But that was like a burst of excitement. Just having Ortiz. You just don't expect to see Big Poppy there at Hadlock Field.
Yeah, no, it was pretty neat. We've had a number of guys over the years. We had a weekend where we had Jacoby Ellsbury and Mike Cameron a couple of years ago, too, in May, and it was just electric. Just a great atmosphere.
Right. As we finish up in the next minute, we've got Jeff Iacusa here. He is the general manager of the Portland Sea Dogs. They start with their home opener this Thursday on the 9th. And the start of 71 home games. I'm obviously biased because I am a longtime season ticket holder and I love going to the games. And baseball, just the rhythm of baseball. And even if, you know, for people that aren't that into baseball, they say, oh, it's slow, it's this, it's that. That's the beauty of it. It's the rhythm. You know,
and the strategy. Yeah,
it may take 30 seconds when a pitcher, you know, pitches and the catcher catches and the batter doesn't swing. But even that, just looking out over the field, you know, I don't want to get into my own field of dreams moment here, but you've got a great facility. You have great staff that really make for the patrons and for the ticket holders feel. The players all seem like they enjoy it, and I think it's a testament to you, the folks you work with, the Burke family, who does a great job being involved with the community. And any final message for our listeners in terms of what they can look forward to this year, other than the cup holders and the box seats, the Wi-Fi, which is a great thing, great food, anything else that we really want to get listeners to go and go online, www.seadogs.com?
I think you nailed it. I think for us, it's going to be making sure we're, as a staff, we're still creating a great atmosphere. And you nailed it. We have some of the best game day employees and full-time staff that are really dedicated to making sure that your experience at the ballpark is going to be great. And we'll continue to hopefully exceed expectations when you come to the park.
I think you will. And although I have to be on the road and I'll miss the home opener, I'll be there a couple of days later. Thank you for coming in and wish you and the whole team and the organization a great season. And I'm sure, you know, Portland and Maine fans will enjoy the next few months of Portland Sea Dog Baseball.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. We'll be back next Saturday. Thank you.